morning. Good morning, everybody. This is Mufasa T. Leon again, bringing you another amazing week of podcast, of fun, of conversation, of dialogue. I love dialogue. I love discussing things. I love talking things. I love sitting down, having a conversation to anyone that's willing to listen. And I'm also willing to listen to everyone else. So today we're going to talk about an article I read by a journalist named Aaron Canty. Okay. The name of the article is Seven Things Black People Want Their Well-Meaning White Friends to Know, which is really interesting to me. Someone I follow on Twitter posted this and retweeted it. I read through the article and it was very interesting to me. So we're going to get into it. We're going to get into my perspective on it, my vantage point from a military perspective, how I see things being in the military, and also my perspective through my experiences as well. All right. So without further ado, the lion speaks. Here we go. All right, now let's get into a little background about where Aaron Canty got the information from. So she references a short film that she saw, an animated short film by the name of Your Black Friend. Okay, and then she talks about how it's narrated by someone named a man named Ben Passmore. And it's based on a mini comic of the same name, and it's a brilliant, refreshing way to examine whiteness and racism, quote unquote. And she talks about how that it really relates to her personal experiences being a black friend of white people, and how, you know, the bias, alienation, what it means to be a good ally, what it means to be a good friend. And she just references that and she uses that as information to kind of fuel her article about these seven things. All right, so first thing we're going to talk about is number one on her list, which is you're going to have to get uncomfortable. All right, you know, she's talking about, you know, things like a racist joke or something benign as your aunt suggests you cross the street when she sees a group of black kids and things like that. And it's not easy to confront friends or people you love, but if you don't do it, part of the problem. So what this means to me is, you know, a lot of times, you know, people don't want to talk about it. People don't want to talk about racism. People don't want to talk about these issues that plague our country, that have plagued our country for centuries, you know, going all the way back to slavery. You know, we're not completely over it yet. And basically, my experience of this is in the military per se. You know, the military is big on diversity. The military is big on welcoming all walks of life to reach a common goal. It doesn't matter who you are or where you're from. If you can get the job done, that's all that matters to me. So, in a sense, sometimes talking about these issues can get uncomfortable. You know, I have a lot of white friends. You know, I didn't grow up in an all black neighborhood. You know, the places I've bounced around in, there are some places that have been predominantly black, obviously, but I don't think I've ever lived in an all white neighborhood until now. You know, but for the most part, you know, bringing up this issue hasn't really, there's been a couple cases where I've gotten into arguments with certain white people or even some black people, but mainly some white people about, you know, them telling me, oh, shut up, get over it, you're not a slave anymore, and things like that, you know what I mean? But you're going to have to speak up. You know, I tell my white friends, well, my wife is white. You know, my wife understands that when it comes to these situations, you can't let that just fly. You have to speak up. You see something, you say something, and especially if you know it's wrong, you know what I mean? And especially if you can kind of tell, oh, you know, we go into an all-white establishment and everyone stops what they're doing to look at this interracial couple. They're not looking at her. All these white people ain't looking at her. Either they're looking at her like, what is this white woman doing with this black woman? Or looking at me like, what is this black dude doing with this white woman? Either way, they're uncomfortable when they see us. And you think, you know, it'd be different with 2018. But basically, you know, it's you gotta get uncomfortable. You know, it's uncomfortable for for certain people to speak up when they see something. Case in point, the situation that just happened at Starbucks recently, last week or maybe a couple days ago, where these black kids get, these black men get arrested because some racist person in Starbucks called the police on them for waiting on their friend. You know, it's things like that. And thank God there were some white people standing around asking, like, what the hell did they do? Because they're two black guys, they got arrested. What did they do? You know, and I'm not going to take anything away from the police. The police did their job for the most part until they arrested them. But people have to understand that to defend other people is uncomfortable. It shouldn't be. It should be natural. But in this day and age, it's uncomfortable because these days people are so worried about the drawback. They're so worried about what people are going to think of them. Some white people are worried about what their white friends are going to think of them, you know, or vice versa. Some black people are worried about what their black friends are going to think of them if they defend a white person. So it's uncomfortable. But if you're a good friend, like Erin Canty says in her article, you have to speak up. If you really care for that person, is that person your brother, that person your sister or your best friend or whatever the case may be, you know, you would expect that person to do the same for you if they're facing some kind of situations. You're going to have those tough conversations with the people you care about. You know what I mean? It's not easy to confront people. She says it's not easy to confront people or strangers that you love. But if you don't do it, you're part of the problem. So basically, if you're one of your best friends or you're one of your brothers or your siblings is calling your black friend, you know, the N-word or calling him a monkey or him or her a monkey or something like that, and you don't say anything, you just kind of just let it happen, you're part of the problem, you know? So that's pretty much what she's saying. All right, number two, she has, your black friend would like to say something to the racist lady, but doesn't want to appear to be that angry black man. Man, I tell you, I know this all too well. I'm telling you, it's crazy. This happens to me all the freaking time, because, you know, a lot of times the hard thing for us black people is that whenever something looks kind of iffy to us, we have to think about how we have to react, because we don't want to immediately jump to the racist card. We don't immediately, I mean, there's some people that do, but we don't immediately want to say, oh, you're being racist. Oh, you know what I mean? Like, I give you an example. A couple years ago, me and my wife were walking in to this Broken Yoke out here in California, right? Open the door for this old lady, this old white lady, to go in after my wife went in. I was like, oh, here you go. Good morning, ma'am. She like clutches her purse and holds it close to her. And I wanted to scream at her and say, lady, I'm not going to take your dang purse. Did you not just see my white wife walk in front of me? But I looked at her and I was like, really? But it's something that we deal with, because we have to watch how we portray ourselves. We have to watch our anger. We have to watch how loud we talk. We have to watch how we, you know, react to certain things, because not only are police going to get called on us, there's a possibility these days that we might get shot, or we're going to look like a fool in front of all these people because we're screaming at somebody that we think might have treated us a little racist. So she talks about how, you know, black people can't always react and respond the way we want to. Back to what I was saying, we can't. You know, she says, when I'm followed in an department store, pulled over for no reason, or stared at, while picking up dinner at a fancy grocery store, I can't stop and what I'm doing and yell, yes, I'm black. No, I'm not a criminal, you small-minded, biased buttholes. Or a-holes, as she said. So, a lot of times we want to scream. We want to be like, yo, I'm not going to freaking take your purse. Or another time, I was at Walmart, walking with my wife and my son, and I walk by this white lady and her like three kids. You know, the minute I'm approaching her to pass her, I look, share a friendly smile. She goes, oh, kids, get behind me. I'm like, are you kidding me? I wanted to go booga, 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 booga. I'm the silverback. Come to take your children. Like, come on. It's ridiculous. So, like Erin says in her article, that's where you come in, white friend. You know, speak up and say something when I can't. There's times where we've experienced this in my wife. We all got stared at. My wife would be like, what are y'all looking at? You know? Or I've seen in certain instances where a white friend will be like, hey, or if a black guy gets pulled over and he's the passenger, kind of like in Get Out, white friend goes, hey, why do you need to see his ID? I'm the one that's driving. You know what I mean? Like, seriously. So she says, white friend, you need to speak up and say something when I can't. If you're not at risk nor considered a threat, you have a certain amount of privilege in situation. So that goes to white privilege, you know. White friends, use your white privilege to combat racism. Use your white privilege to, you know, because honestly, y'all can say whatever y'all want to police in most situations. You know, we curse the police out, we might get tased, you know, or shot. You know, and things might escalate worse than they are. But I've seen situations where white people or white dudes or white women are cursing these cops the hell out. Like, I'm talking about to the top of their lungs. You're my father is a lawyer and the DA, and you're going to see me in court for this. And like, just going off, you know, who do you think you are? How dare you pull me over? The audacity of you to pull me over, you know, and most of the time, you guys can get out of those situations. For us, we just look like the angry black person. Why are you angry? You're not a slave. Stop being angry and complaining all the time. You know? So, use your privilege to demand answers, speak to supervisors, or things get really dicey. Pull out your phone and hit that record. Because now everything is on the phone now. You know? So, I personally, I'm 50-50 on the whole phone record thing. Because on one hand, we live in an age of social media and news media, and things need to get seen. Otherwise, how we know? Because none of this stuff is new. All this stuff has been happening, just no one's been able to see it. But now that we all have cell phones, everyone, the whole world can see it. On the flip side, I feel like someone that's just recording and not doing anything about it, I feel like that person should be held responsible. Like, if I'm sitting here getting my behind whipped by some police and I'm looking at you, you're just recording it saying, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, why don't you do something about it? You know what I mean? You're just gonna let me get my behind whipped, or you gonna let me get racial epithets thrown at me while you sit there and press record? So I'm kind of torn. Either way, white friends, use your privilege to speak up. All right, coming in at number 3, we are constantly monitoring our surroundings and adjusting our clothes, hair, and speech to maintain white comfort. So what is white comfort? I'm glad you asked. So to black people, white comfort is pretty much anything that we have to do to change the way we talk or walk, act, or anything that we change about ourselves in order to appeal to white people, to make them comfortable so that they don't see us as a threat. What does that mean? That means, if I go out, if I'm going to the grocery store, right, and I'm going to get diapers for my kids, and it's a cold night, now being in the military, most of the time I'm going to have my head shaved or low, which means my head's going to be cold, so I want to wear a hoodie, right? And I have to think about, if I go to the grocery store at 8 or 9 o'clock at night in a hoodie, what are they going to think? Are they going to see me as suspicious? Are they going to think, oh, this black man must be up to something? Or are they going to see this man just coming to get diapers for his kid? You know, that's something that we have to think about. The fact that we have to think about it is ridiculous. You know? Also, speaking with a certain vernacular, you know, for me, like, I'm from New York. For the most part, my accent is gone. But when I get angry, it comes, it flares up. I'm like, yo, son, what you talking about, son? Your dad, me? Like, it comes and goes. But around certain white people, I have friends. I have black friends or, you know, that change their speech and they sound a little bit more professional. Hi, how are you? I'm Rayshawn. And you're like, bro, you was just calling me the N-word just 5 minutes ago. What do you mean I'm Rayshawn? But that's something that we think about, you know, how are people going to view us? Like, you know, you think about athletes when they do interviews and stuff like that. A lot of people don't like to do interviews with these athletes because of the way they talk. or where they're from. And you can't really help where you're from. You kind of, you learn different speech based on your education and, you know, who you're around. But we shouldn't have to change how we talk, you know, around white people because, you know, to appeal to their comfort. Hair, you know, certain hairstyles. I mean, these days it's getting a little bit more lenient because I think a lot of people are adopting different hairstyles. So it's not really, it doesn't really matter anymore, you know, but it's just different things, you know. Like, for example, she's using this example, like, how we have to maintain white comfort to avoid having the cops being called on us, which is true. You know, there's a situation I was in several years ago when I was stationed in Jacksonville, Florida. I was coming from my chief's wedding, accidentally rear-ended this white lady. And I'm like, oh, crap, I just rear-ended this white lady. We pull over to the side. I'll pull up next on my walk out in my car. I look at the damage to see if there's anything. Oh, okay, there's no damage. We're good. Let me go see how she's doing. I come up to her. I'm like, hey, wave at her. She rolls out in the window. And I'm like, hey, ma'am, I'm really sorry. I rear-ended you. I wasn't paying attention. Are you hurt? Are you okay? Are you in shock? She seemed like she was a little nervous. Oh, no, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm like, okay. I just want to let you know there's no damage. If you want, you can come out with me. We can look at your car, and we can go from there. She's like, no, I'm not getting out of my car. I'm calling the cops. I'm like, okay, ma'am, calm down. I understand. Just be rear-ended. I'm in the military. You know, I took out my ID and showed her, hey, I'm in the military. And mind you, I was wearing the geekiest outfit. I looked like I came from a wedding. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't look threatening at all. At least in my eyes, I didn't. You know, I had my glasses on, suspenders, a bow tie. I was pretty dressed up. And I said, ma'am, I'm in the military. I'm stationed here. I'm with the pension. I'm really sorry. I just want to make sure that you're okay. I was like, you know, if you want, you can get out of the car. I tried to reassure her that I wasn't a threat to her. No, I'm not getting out. I'm calling the cops. You can't trust anybody these days. I'm like, okay, ma'am. Well, whatever. I'll be in the back. I'll be in my car if you need anything. So, of course, I'm nervous. I'm like, man, it's like calling the cops on me. Like, you kidding me? A situation that could be handled really quickly. All she had to do was get out of her dang car, look at her bumper, and get back in her car and drive the hell off. So the cops come, and he's like, yo, what's going on? Luckily, the cop was really cool. He was nice. He was like, hey, you know, this is not that bad. There's no damage. You guys can handle it civilly. And I'm like, thanks, police man. And in front of him, she apologized. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm like, what do you mean you're sorry? I think you profiled me. You know, like, I tried to reassure you that I wasn't a threat to you. I was like, do I look threatening to you right now? Well, not really. I'm like, well, why didn't I look threatening to you 5 minutes ago? When I showed you my military ID to show you that to try to comfort you, and because I felt like I really hit you hard. You know, so why didn't you show me this same level of comfort and composure when, you know, I tried to reassure you and comfort you? Like, I'm sorry, I hit you. You know, obviously I made you nervous, so you don't have to profile me and make me feel like I'm a threat to you just because I'm a big black dude in suspenders. Either way, it made me mad. I got back in my car. And me and the cop actually had a long discussion for like another 20 minutes about just life, which is cool. So it turned out. So it worked out. But we don't ever like to have the police calling us. You see these videos that go viral all the time. These situations that could have been de-escalated if people were just adults. And these cops get called, like the Starbucks incident. Like, these cops get called on us. Like, why is that your first door? Like, because we're going to get shot? Or you know they're going to automatically remove us? Why can't you just handle it with us yourself? Oh, that's why, because we're angry. You know, and I'm going to have to talk to my son about it when he gets to a certain age. Like, son, you got to comply. You know, you got to do this, you got to do that. You got to be careful what you say. You got to be careful how you position yourself. Don't get an attitude. Don't make any sudden movements. Things like that. I have to tell my son, and it makes me nervous and it scares me because I know that my wife always fears my life. Not just for the simple fact that I'm in the military. She fears my life for me being in the military, having to go on deployment, and she fears my life at home. Being a black man, that's sad. All right, so at this age in America, it's 2018, and we still feel like we have to do things for white comfort, which I don't understand, because there's this notion that somehow black people are to be feared. When historically, you know what I mean, white people, Caucasian, European Americans, whatever you want to call it, have been the most violent people on the planet in humankind, in human history, have been the most violent people colonizing, conquering, spreading disease, freaking, why do we still celebrate Christopher Columbus Day? Why? You know what I mean? Stealing land from the Native Americans. Like, just different things here and there, but somehow we're savages, we're monkeys and gorillas, and we're to be feared. You know what I mean? It blows my mind. It really does. So, I'll be honest. Screw white comfort. All right. If you're not comfortable with me as a person, if I come off threatening to you, then get away from me. You know what I mean? It shouldn't be like that, and it's sad. We should all be comfortable with each other. And there's circumstances that I know that combat that whole notion, but at the same time, in the era where everything is accepted, you know, white comfort is the last thing I'm thinking about. All right, let's make this quick. All right, let's make this nice and quick. All right, number four, your black friend wishes you play more than Beyonce. There are more black performers than Beyonce. All right, I don't think I need to really touch on that too deeply, because I mean, it's simple, you know. Like, Beyonce ain't the only black performer in the world. Ain't the only black person that does music. And I don't think white people are ignorant enough to think that. You know, maybe like rich old white people or something like that. But for the most part, in 2018, I think everyone listens to everything. So, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, you know, she pretty much says, you know, dip a toe outside your comfort zone and try new artists and genres you may not be familiar with. I mean, hell, Hootie and the Blowfish. You know, had a freaking black dude singing country music. So that should tell you enough right there. And while we're here, you can't say the N-word when you sing along. Nope, you just can't. Okay. Now, this is the way I feel about that. All right, this is what she said. You can't say the N-word when you sing along. If people can't say words in songs when they sing along, then why have it in songs? You're essentially... Someone's listening to a song that they love and that they like, and they hear certain words in it. It's that person's right to sing along to whatever what that person's words are, because essentially by putting these words in the song as an artist, you're giving everyone a license to say what you're saying, because people are going to like the song and they're going to repeat after you. So you can't get mad, black people. I'm talking to y'all, black people. You got to stop getting mad at white people for saying the N-word when they're singing along the songs, when we keep putting it in the song. You know, case in point, freaking Freaky Friday with Chris Brown and Lil Dicky. People are mad at Lil Dicky saying, oh, because, you know, theoretically in the video or in the song, Lil Dicky and Chris Brown switch bodies. And he's like, oh, I can say the N-word. I gotta say the N-word, da da da. It's Chris Brown saying it, but essentially it's Lil Dicky thinking that, you know, saying it, in a sense. Everyone's saying, oh, Lil Dicky is giving little white girls and boys in high school the license to say it. No, Chris Brown is the one saying it. And people are singing along to it because they like it. So, you can't get mad at people if you want to put it in a song. You're going to put crack and cocaine in the song, and people are going to sing along to that. You're going to put bees and holes in the song, people are going to sing along to that. You know what I mean? Whatever words you put, words are powerful. Whatever words you put in a song, you're giving everyone a license to say it. You can't get mad when they say it. All right, number five. Speaking of which, performative blackness is really uncomfortable. Okay, so what's she talking about? She's talking about cultural appropriation, culture vultures, things of that nature. All right, you got too many white people out here that's appropriating and pandering to us, when it's like, you don't really have to be yourself. You know what I mean? Like, our blackness is not a freaking costume. You can't just put it on when it suits you, or put it on when you're trying to pander us and try to talk a certain way, have your little black scent, quote unquote, and talk all hood, or what you think is hood, or ghetto, what you call a ghetto, and think that that's supposed to appeal to us and try to be cool. Like, if you come from a certain neighborhood, or if you come from a certain background or culture, then that's what you came from. Like, I know, like, there's people, like, white girls out of Oakland, or white girls out of New York, or white girls out of just different places across the country who can't help the way they talk and stuff like that. Or then you have people like this chick on social media who is this white girl on social media from Buckhead, which is like a rich freaking neighborhood in Atlanta where freaking Lenox Mall is at. And if you know anything about Atlanta and anything about Lenox Mall, you know it's rich. But this chick is convinced that she's black. Like, talking about, oh, I knew that my birthday is May 19th, but I knew on, like, June 7th that I was black. Like, why are you talking like that? Like, that's probably not how she talks. I do not believe it. I don't see it. Like, come on. Alright. There's nothing I can't stand more than a pandering hood white girl who ain't really like that. Like, be yourself. You know what I mean? So she talks about, you know, simply, like, we don't get to be black when it suits us. So why is it okay for you to try to, quote unquote, be black? You know what I mean? You got people out there who are, if you admire the culture, like, admire black culture, that's fine. Black culture is one of the biggest cultures in America, if not the biggest culture in America. So if you admire it and you want to celebrate it with us and we can do it together. And there's people that have done it, like Justin Bieber, Robin Thicke, Justin Timberlake. Who else? Freaking Pink at one point. Snagler at one point. Just different artists, different actresses. Like, there's different people out there who celebrate the culture, who understand the culture, who just celebrate it and admire it with us. And we're not saying anything to them. We're not accusing them of appropriation or anything like that. Because they're not trying to be black. They're not trying to pander to us. They're just people who like the culture and enjoy and celebrating it. Then you got people who just want to pander. And to you, I say, be yourself. Our blackness is not a costume. All right, moving along, we got number 6. Your black friend feels like a man without a country. So this is what she says. Having white friends and seeming to fit in with a majority can feel like really alienating. You can feel too white for black people and too black for white people when all you want to do is find people to eat pizza with. And as Passmore wrote, he's lost in a contradiction and held responsible for it. So what does it mean, like, when it says your black friend feels like a man without a country? So, like, a lot of times we don't feel like we fit in. Well, a lot of times we're like the only black person here, the only black person there. And we look around and everyone stops and stares at us. I remember when I was in Pittsburgh several years ago with my best friend. And we weren't with him. It was me and my other friend. His father, his white father, he's white. His father took us to this one of the best pizza joints in Pittsburgh, you know, to kind of get a taste of that Pittsburgh culture. Pittsburgh pizza with a really thick crust, right? So me and my best friend, who's also black, he walks us in there, and literally everyone stopped what they were doing and looked at us, like, and I was like, huh? Did I miss something? Literally everybody stopped what they were doing and just stopped and stared at us. And his father, my friend's father, is like, can I help y'all? Is there something? Is there a freaking Loch Ness monster that y'all looking at or something? Is Sasquatch walking here or something? And it goes to show, like, a lot of times we feel naturally uncomfortable because we just feel sometimes alienated. Even in this world where everything is being accepted, you know, if you're too white for black people, people accuse you of being white. Black people always accuse you of acting white if you speak educated. You know, if you have a certain vernacular or a certain speech pattern that sounds educated, they think, oh, you're trying to be white. But what does that even mean? You know, or if you're with some of your white friends and you speak how you speak like you were around anybody else, or like you feel like you're trying to be too black. We can't take you nowhere. Like, what does that even freaking mean? And you just want to just go hang out, have a good time. You know, so. It's weird trying to find your place in this world. For so long, you've been trying to find your place, and still, we're trying to find our place. Even though things have gotten a lot better than they used to be, a whole lot better than they used to be, we're still trying to find the confidence to sit down on that chair and scoot into the table so we can all have a discussion and dine with one another. All right, last but not least, number 7. We would love it if we could stop talking about our anxiety and frustrations regarding racism. But right now, that's impossible. And then she says, our concerns are urgent and real. We're getting subpar healthcare. We're disenfranchised. We're over-policed. We're thrown in jail. We're killed by people sworn to protect us. It's exhausting, but we have to keep talking about it. And so do you. We can't be expected, to dismantle white supremacy on our own. Our white friends and allies need to step up and gather their people. Have a tough conversation. Speak up when you see racism, discrimination, and microaggressions. The time to talk about it is done. Be about it or find yourself a new black friend. So, I'll take this as pretty much, I think it's on point for the most part. You know, I feel like a lot of us are disenfranchised. You know, we come from poverty. Not to say that there aren't white people that are in impoverished situations too, but you know, you're white and poor with white privilege. We're black and poor with no privilege. You know, some of us, not all of us. But I think it's important, you know, to see the problem for what it is. A lot of America was founded by old white dudes, founded by Europeans. You know, even today now, a lot of people in power are who? Old white dudes who have the same ideals that they had back during Jim Crow era, or that shared the same values that their parents, who were slave owners and slave masters and things of that such, shared. You know, that's why you have situations like what happened with Donald Sterling, that NBA owner of the LA Clippers, the former owner of the LA Clippers. You know, how he really felt about us black people coming out at the forefront. You know, situations like that. And I think as white people, I think you I'm not going to say you owe it to us. You don't really owe us any. Well, I mean, that can be argued. I mean, you don't owe us anything. Basically, what I'm saying is, I think you owe it to yourself as a person, as a human being, and a fellow human being that sees a community of people that have been oppressed for so long to call things out the way that they are and not hide from it and not try to rationalize why things might be the way they are, or try to rationalize, you know, saying, oh, you guys have athletes, or oh, you guys have this, or you guys have that. Most of the athletes that we have come from nothing, and it's because of our talent, you know, because of the things that we're able to do to perform for you white people, that we are given that opportunity. A lot of people aren't given that opportunity, you know, at the same token, or in musicians as well, because of the values and the things that we got from our culture. We can use that as a way to get out of the hood or things like that. But putting things in perspective and staying on point, black people can't combat white supremacy on their own. You know, there is a white supremacy issue in the United States, whether you want to admit it or not. You know, I mean, I think a lot of it has been brought to the forefront with our president, you know, my boss, technically commander in chief, President Donald Trump. When he got elected, a lot of people felt comfortable in their racism and started bringing it to the forefront. None of this crap was happening on this clip when President Obama was a president. You know, people felt a lot more comfortable. You know, that situation in Virginia. You know, Jews will not replace us. Blacks will not replace us. Gays will not replace us. Things of that nature. You know what I mean? That's people in tiki torches, you know, marching the streets, you know, and all because of a Confederate soldier statue that was left up and them arguing against it. And I feel like, honestly, after the Civil War, I think all Confederate crap should have been taken down, period. You know what I mean? Period. The minute that Germany lost the war, all Germany swastikas and all that bull crap was erased. You know what I mean? The only people that still rocking that crap is the Aryan people, You know what I mean? White power people. You know, and why is the Confederacy still being celebrated? Why is the flag still being celebrated? I've heard like somebody, this guy named Will Kane on ESPN talk about how it means heroism to some people in the South and stuff like that. So you telling me some states that went against the entirety of America all because they wanted to keep slavery represents heroism, and that's still being celebrated? Christopher Columbus is still being celebrated, even though we know that he spread disease and stole some Native Americans' land, but yet he's credited with being the first person to discover America, which is utter bullcrap if you educate yourself and you pick up a book and read. So it's amazing to me that people aren't willing to call things what they are, and people aren't willing to see things as they are. And you know, I'm talking to you white people, you know, just to use your privilege to call things out. Help us out. We needed white people to get to this point where we are now. We could not have done it on our own. Those people that came before us, black people, Martin Luther King, Coretta Scott King, Malcolm X, all that stuff, they all needed white people who agreed, who saw these issues, who saw that these things that were happening to us were wrong. And it's not even just on the color standpoint, it's on a human standpoint. You know, we always talk about how we're the greatest country. People say we're the greatest country on earth. But yet, if you look at the way we treat each other in this country, how low our rank is in education and healthcare and things like that in this country, I'm still trying to figure out how are we the greatest country. And I'm proud. I serve my military proud. I serve my country proud. I love being in the military. I love serving my country. I love walking down the street and people saying thank you for your service, because it's these sacrifices that are keeping people in bed at night, making them feel safe. But on the same token, am I as a black man, not just a military member, a black man making my wife feel safe when if I get pulled over, she's fearing for my life as a black man? I could say I'm military all day, but that crap can go out the window real quick. You know, so I implore you white people out there, you know, to speak up. You know, we needed you back then and we need you now. We need you to stand with us in this fight against this injustices in America. These injustices in America, these things that are happening to people. And it's not just happening to black people, it's happening to all people. You know, it's happening to Asians, happening to Hispanics or brown people. People that come from different cultures who are being alienated because they don't look like everyone else. And it's amazing that it's 2018 and this stuff is still going on. You know, why can't your 75-year-old grandmother change her way of thinking and understand that things happen, things evolve, things change, people change? You know, things aren't the same as they used to be back in the 40s and 50s when you were screaming at that little black girl crossing the street. You know what I mean? Things aren't the same. Things aren't what they used to be. So, you know, the time is now. Step up, talk, speak up, stand up for what you believe in. If you feel that it's wrong from a humanity standpoint, speak up. And if you don't speak up, and you're watching people get oppressed, and you watch people get hurt, you watch people get murdered, you're part of the problem. Thank you guys for listening to the podcast. It was my pleasure to bring dialogue and talk about my perspective and vantage point on things. If you want to respond or if you want to have a discussion, you can find me on Twitter at lionspeaks_23, all lowercase, obviously. Or you can follow the link anchor.fm/lionspeaks. And you can also find that on my profile, my bio on Twitter. All right. So thank you. God bless, and the lion has spoken.